Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the show on this Wednesday, September 17th, 2014. And tonight I have a really special guest, Mark Snyder. He's the popular host of Ohio Exopolitics Radio. He's been the host for 5 years. And we're going to talk about the Swiss farmer, Billy Edward Albert Meyer, who is really a controversial figure in the ET area. He's had 68 years of extraterrestrial contactee experience, and he's been involved with who they call the Polarians, and he has had predictions which have come true, remarkable predictions through the years. Of course, he's had some misses too, and there are the photographs and videos of the beam ships of these aliens. And I know that there are those skeptics out there that think he has made models, and he, you know, they just say that he is a con artist. And I think Mark is going to talk about that and tell us if he's really fact or fiction tonight. So let me tell you a little bit more about Mark. His radio show, Exopolitics, is heard in 101 countries around the world. He has worked in the software field for the last 20 years, and he's currently employed as a senior programmer analyst at the Fortune 500 company in Columbus, Ohio. And not only has he been a competitive bodybuilder for years and winning titles, but Mark also performs as a solo fingerstyle guitarist at many venues in Central Ohio and has recorded 2 CDs. And his website, for all of you, be sure to go to exopoliticsohio.us. So let me welcome Mark. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show tonight.
Hi, Betsy. How are you tonight?
Oh, great. Doing great. And I'm excited to hear, what got you interested in Billy Meyer?
You know, that's a very, very good question. You know, if you go all the way back to my childhood, I had some very interesting, strange things happen to me, kind of like you have. And from there, I just put that in the back of my mind. And I think it was Dr. Stephen Greer's disclosure video that kind of got me interested in this whole area again. And that was back in 2008. And
oh, wow.
I started reading everything I could get my hands on. And in 2010, I decided I had to kind of start the radio show and do something. But 2 years before that, I started listening now and again to Randy Winters, who was the original representative of Billy Meyer for the U.S. And then,
oh, really? I didn't know that.
Oh, have you ever heard of Randy Winters?
I haven't. No.
Oh, he actually, Michael Horn used to kind of be, Michael Horn would help Randy out. Sometimes he would play music before his show and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Randy Winters was the original guy, and he produced, he had a whole tape series, I think several hundred tapes on information from the Meyer case, and he would travel around talking about it, and he did a lot of videos. You can see those on YouTube, and oh, they're fascinating. And I would just listen to him and be amazed. I mean, I would just kind of go into awe and shock, and I kept studying the Meyer material on my own, and then I think probably about 2010 or so, when my radio show started, is when I really got focused on the Meyer material. I think for me, I'm really interested in answering the big questions in life. You know, who are we? Where do we come from?
Sure.
What are the other extraterrestrial civilizations like? How do they travel from star to star? Who built the ancient monolithic structures all over the Earth? What happens after we die? What's the creator of the universe like? And I kept finding all of these answers in the Meyer material, and they were the most intellectual, truthful information that I've ever come across. So
mm-hmm.
I'm still pounding away on it, and I'll let you point me in the right direction. I can rattle on forever about the Meyer material.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. I know I've had Michael Horn on my show many times, and I've asked him about this. That, you know, does Billy Meyer really think that there's only one type of aliens visiting us, extraterrestrials, the Pleiadians? And he said yes. So is that what you get from what Billy Meyer has said? And do you believe that?
Well, that's a good question. And it's a very big question that leads to a whole lot of information. I'll tell you what Semyase told Billy. Semyase is the first official contact. Billy had 22 years of contacts before Semyase, and we can get into that
mm-hmm.
in a minute.
Okay.
Semyase said, your forefathers are our forefathers, and our forefathers are the Lyrians. And the Lyrians were titans. They were giants. They came into the Milky Way galaxy, according to Contact 238, about 26 million years ago. And I think that's actually a translation error. I think it was actually billions of years ago. The Lyrians, millions and millions of years ago, were a spacefaring group. Now, they came to the Earth the first time 22 million years ago and just stayed for a short time. They came again mm-hmm. 389,000 years ago, and they brought some 2 million people. Now, the Lyrians, when they were here, certain members of the Lyrians, certain groups, violated certain laws and principles that they had. They abused the native Earth humans physically, emotionally, and sometimes sexually. Not all of them, not all the Lyrians did these things, but certain groups did certain,
mm-hmm.
what we would call crimes, okay? And as a punishment, not a true criminal punishment, but as a what they call a codex, some of these Lyrians were, they had all their technology taken away, and they had to stay here. So they died on the Earth. And according to the Meyer material, the planet you die on is the planet you reincarnate on. So your question was, are there any other extraterrestrials visiting the Earth?
Right.
So the way I answered that was, well, I guess 2 million years ago, the Lyrians came here,
mm-hmm.
and they had a colony 389,000 years ago. Some of them died on the Earth, and now some of them are reincarnating on the Earth. Not only that, but I mean, this, when you get into the whole history aspect of things, yes, we've had other contacts. We've had other extraterrestrials that have visited here. But I think what Michael's trying to say, and I'm sorry I'm so long-winded, Betsy, is what Michael's trying to say. I warned you that I would be just shut me up.
No, you're not. You're doing great.
Okay.
Mark.
What Michael is trying to say is there's Billy's case is really unique. Very, very unique. I mean, I would let Michael, kind of defend himself on that, but it's so unique that it really kind of stands alone. And I know that sounds maybe a little arrogant. You know, but, and we can talk more about that later. I'll let you ask another question.
Well, you were talking about, right, the Lyrians, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, are they related to the Anunnaki? Because we've heard so many stories about the Anunnaki coming here from Nibiru. And so are they related? Are they totally different? Are they real? It gets very confusing with all these aliens that have visited Earth and maybe are still visiting Earth.
I don't see that the Anunnaki and the Lyrians are the same. However, if you look at the word Anunnaki, I believe in the Sumerian language, that's a very general term. And it translates as those who came down from the skies or those who came down from the heavens. Now,
interesting.
You see what I'm saying? So the question,
right.
The problem is a lot of the answers are kind of convoluted.
So the Lyrians were giants?
The Lyrians, from our perspective, are definitely giants. They colonized this galaxy. They conquered other worlds. They mixed with other peoples from other worlds. They created an empire, and their pattern was to do this. They would rise to a very, very high level of development, and they would war among themselves, and then they would have to kind of rebuild. Their weapons were very efficient. They had weapons which would destroy entire planets now and stars. Let me explain one thing that you might find interesting. Have you heard of the Ring Nebula?
I think I have. Yes, go ahead, but explain that.
Well, according to the Meyer material, the Ring Nebula, the Pleiaren, referred to as JHWH Mata, which translates as the Eye of God. Now, that doesn't mean Eye of God.
Oh, right.
We would think of. For them, it's a symbol of degeneracy and a symbol of evil. Because according to their ancient history, there were one of these Lyrian leaders who destroyed a star. And that is left over from the destruction of that star. It's really ionizing gas from a destroyed star. I don't know if you've ever heard the term Ishwish, which means
no,
king.
No, I haven't.
They have leaders. There are seven evolutionary steps in human evolvement. The Pleiaren see us as a stage two society, and they label stage two societies as rational, meaning that we have the ability to think rationally. Stage one
but
is primitive.
Don't.
But we don't, of course.
No, we don't.
That's a good point. We have the ability, we just don't do it. Stage three, they call intelligence societies. They don't see us as an intelligence society yet. They say some parts of our society are moving into the third stage. The fourth stage is what they call real life. And at this stage, human civilizations become true spacefaring societies, and they can travel from star to star with almost no time passing. And to make it really simple, they turn the ship and the people and the contents of the ship into energy. Just for a split second, they step out of our space-time, and they move into this other realm. It's the sixth belt of our universe, where time is very different, and they can move from star to star with almost no time passing, and then they kind of rematerialize, and they travel through this hyperspace. Well, four-stage societies also learn incredible things about genetic engineering. And one of the things they learn is the ability, now this is going to twist your mind in a pretzel, they learn the ability to create sentient life, organic intelligence. For example, the central computer of Semyase's ship was a sentient organic intelligence that she could have telepathic contact with. So, for all intents and purposes, her ship was a living being with a metallic hull. Now, that is bizarre, but isn't that strange?
It is, and I think that's where we're headed with our technology, believe it or not. But it sounds like they were master geneticists, and I think that's still going on. And star seeding, they're going out and terraforming planets and seeding them, and I think that's going on throughout the universe or universes out there.
And I think you're right. I think it's funny, when you study this kind of material, it gets stranger and stranger, doesn't it? Do you ever feel that way?
It does. I do. It's the Twilight Zone, isn't it, Mark?
I know it is. It really, really is.
It really is. You know, and you're talking about the Lyrians, and to go back to, you know, the archaeologists around the world have found, you know, evidence of giants. You know, it's in the Bible, David and Goliath, and, you know, here in the United States, there have been giant bones found of some race, and, of course, it's been kind of covered up. I've read different things about it that they didn't want to, you know, I guess somebody doesn't want us to know that there were giants that roamed the earth at one time.
You've done a lot of research on that too, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, I've read many things. I've watched many programs about that. There's just interesting information. In fact, the Smithsonian is supposed to harbor giant skeletons in their basement. There's just a lot of things that you don't see at the Smithsonian that's down in their basement.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You had asked about the Lyrians, and I was telling you a little bit how they had colonized the Milky Way galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
They had these beings that they called Ishwishes, and that's a person that's living in what they call the fifth stage of evolution, in what they call creational wisdom. And a person at this level of evolvement learns to master things like telepathy, telekinesis, levitation, looking into the future, looking into the past, even teleportation, mind-bending, things like that. And some of these people became leaders in the Lyrian societies, and every once in a while, one of these Ishwishes would tend towards becoming a tyrant. And one of these Ishwishes, by the name of Asael, left the Lyrian constellation with hundreds of thousands of these Lyrians, and they came to the Pleiades star system, and that's where they settled about 230,000 years ago. And that's how the Pleiaren kind of got their start.
Interesting.
So it's
really interesting.
Go ahead.
And, you know, Mark, yeah, I was just going to say, it's interesting that our mythology, you know, ancient cultures all around the world have, you know, stories of bird people that came from the sky, the Egyptians, the Romans, the Greeks. And I believe those were extraterrestrials that they were describing. It's really interesting. The Quetzalcoatl, right, from Mexico,
yeah,
was a serpent god, and there's just many, many more that we can read about. And I think mythology is based on fact. I really do.
Didn't Isis, was it Isis? Osiris. It was Osiris that had the ibis head.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. So I think, you know, our history is just full of extraterrestrial information.
But we don't recognize it yet, do we?
Mm-hmm. No, we don't. We don't. So let's get back to Billy, because talk about Billy. He's, what, 77 years old now?
Yes, he's Edward Albert Meyer. Is a 77-year-old farmer. He lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti, which is about an hour east of Zurich, Switzerland. Mm-hmm. He grew up in a town in an area called Bulach, Switzerland. And the specific village, I think, is called Niederflachs. His first extraterrestrial contact occurred in 1945, and he was told to go out and play in the forest, which he did. He was getting these messages, telepathic messages in his head, and sometimes he would see this image in his mind of an old man who would talk to him. So he went out into the forest there in Bulach, Switzerland, and he was looking down in a stream at these fish swimming around. And out of the sky came this silvery pear-shaped craft, which sat down there in the field, and out stepped this man named Svaf, who was a 1,000-year-old extraterrestrial man, and who walked over to young Billy, took him by the hand, and led him back into the ship. And Billy wasn't afraid. I mean, he had heard his voice before and seen his face. And he went into Svaf's ship, and Svaf took him up about 70,000 meters above the earth. And Billy could see in this ship all of these viewing screens. And on these viewing screens, he saw people, various people. And Svaf started to tell Billy why he had contacted him. And he explained that he was going to be his teacher for the next 11 years. And he explained to Billy that he was going to have a very important life, and he was going to be a teacher, and he was going to be a prophet, and that he had done this before, this kind of work before, on the earth. And that he had been, on the earth, he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And this was the seventh straight incarnation of that spirit. His spirit form is very ancient. The extraterrestrials know his spirit form by the name of Nokodemian. And Nokodemian is the person that they recognize as the leader that brought those Lyrians into the Milky Way galaxy millions of years ago. So Svaf was Billy's first extraterrestrial teacher. And he told Billy that he would have a difficult life, that people... many people would not be ready for his information, that they would call him a hoaxer, that people would try to kill him, that even his own wife would leave him. But he was told to focus on his writings, because in this incarnation, his writings will be saved in their original form. And that centuries from now, people will start to realize the truthfulness of his information. But that we were going through a transition period called the third millennium, which will last for the next 800 years. And Svaf explained to Billy that that same year, 1945, that the United States would drop the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which would begin this difficult transition period. And in the third millennium, it's said that our leaders will become megalomaniacal. They will take away our rights of self-determination. They will take away our freedoms of speech, the freedom to have a fair trial, the freedom to own and bear arms. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that. And the people of the earth will become what the Meyer material calls indolent, lazy. They'll be obtuse. They'll they'll be disinterested. You know, how many people are staring at their cell phones these days?
Yes, exactly.
And so the one of the difficult things, and now you've probably heard Michael Horn talk about the Henoch prophecies. Now, I mentioned
yes.
Billy's first incarnation mm-hmm. as Enoch. Well,
yes.
The Pleiaron pronounce that as Henoch. They say he was originally called Henoch, and they tell us the current mm-hmm. book of Enoch is very, it's been modified tremendously. But Henoch had a whole series of prophecies that were done. Well, Henoch was born about 8,903 B.C. And in about, I'll probably get this date wrong, but it was Contact 215, which I'm guessing was in the 1980s, Billy got the Henoch prophecies from another extraterrestrial man called Quetzal. And Quetzal gave him the whole Henoch prophecy, and then Billy, of course, would write it down in the contact notes. And Billy was told that the greatest disaster in recorded history will occur in the North American continent, where nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons will be released by automated systems which run outside of human control. Now, that's a prophecy. That doesn't guarantee it's going to happen. It may or may not
mm-hmm.
happen. So we haven't seen that yet, thank goodness. The other prophecy...
No, we haven't, thank goodness.
One of the prophecies, or some of the prophecies that I talk about a lot on my show, and I play a lot of clips about this, are the rolling walls of fire. Now, in the Henoch prophecies, it says that there will be rolling walls of fire that roll across the United States. And it even talks about entire cities being burned. And it explains something called firestorms, which I've never known until this year what a firestorm was. They're having fires in the Midwest now that rotate
California.
Like... Right. And
yeah.
Betsy, they rotate like tornadoes. And
mm-hmm.
the wind...
I've seen that.
Have you seen that?
Yes, it's incredible, isn't it? Oh my goodness.
It's prophesied in the Meyer material. And when I started seeing those last year, I was floored by that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how closely you've followed this, but last year we had the Rim Fire in San Francisco. Have you heard of that one?
Right, right.
That was 400 square miles. 400 square miles.
Oh my God. I was watching the news tonight, and I think they said there's like 14, 15 wildfires going in Northern California, and the homes have just been going up in fire. You know, it's just, you know, devastation there. It looks like a bomb dropped on the area. And these poor people, you know, I keep saying with these earth changes and everything going on, there won't be any place on this planet that won't be affected in some way. And now the Southwest from the hurricane that just hit Cabo, you know, San Lucas, that whole area on the Baja, is now moving up through Arizona, and they're going to have flash floods again throughout the Southwest. I mean, they're expecting a deluge of water to hit them tonight and tomorrow. So, you know, it's just incredible what's going on with our planet.
It happens. There's so much going on, I can't even keep up with it.
I know, I can't either, Mark.
I can't keep up with it. They had
a whole
complex of fires in California called the Carlton mm-hmm. Complex Fires. And that also, That occurred in Washington State, the Carlton Complex Fires. And it also burned 400 square miles, and it's the biggest fire in the state, Washington State history. Is that not?
You know, Mark, it is. And, you know, I have to add this. You know, I have been watching the chemtrails since the late 90s, and I think it dries out. You know, there is supposed to be aluminum and, you know, other chemicals in that, and that would certainly dry things out. And California has been hit with chemtrails through the years. I mean, just horrendous amount of chemtrails. And I think somebody wants these things to happen in California. And I've seen what it's done here in Idaho with our beautiful trees. You know, they're dying, they're drying out. We've got beetle infestation up there that are killing them. So I think there's something going on there. And I think what Billy said was so right on. There's just so incredible what he foresaw years and years ago.
I have a short clip I could play just for play part
Would
of it
you?
If you're interested. Yeah.
Oh, please.
Okay. These are some of the Washington fires. I won't play the whole thing, probably.
Tonight, hot, dry winds are fanning wildfires in six western states. Hundreds of families have been forced from their homes, and some have no home to go back to. Carter Evans reports Washington is among the hardest hit.
Smoke rose 25,000 feet over the largest fires burning in Washington state. The fire that's destroyed 100 homes in Potreros has scorched more than 168,000 acres. Josh Allen was turned away at a roadblock.
Probably the hardest thing I've had to do. Knowing that your house is burning up.
This fire on the eastern slopes of the Cascade Mountains produced a wall of flames that moved in on the town of Leavenworth. 900 homes have been evacuated, including Tim Germain's.
It really looked like, you know, the cauldron of hell. You know, you can see flames everywhere you looked. With this kind of heat and wind, it looks like eastern Washington is going to burn to the ground.
Across the country.
Anyway, the cauldron of hell. Can you believe that?
No. It's just unconscionable what's going on with our planet right now. And the people that are suffering, the victims out there, you know, my heart just goes out to them. And you know, I just can't even imagine. Can you imagine losing everything that you have? You know, in a huge fire or with torrential rains or, you know, it's just so much going on. Like we said, it's just incredible. And, you know, I foresee more of that, don't you? I do.
Unfortunately.
Some hard times.
Did you say a giant storm is currently hitting Arizona?
Yeah, did you hear about, well, there was a hurricane that hit, a huge hurricane. There's been two hurricanes now off the coast of Mexico, and this one hit Cabo San Lucas in the Baja, and it's headed right up through Arizona in the southwest, and they're saying huge rains again.
Man.
It's going to be huge. Yeah, they're sandbagging. They're doing everything they possibly can for all this rain. But, you know, it's tough down there in the desert when they get hit like that.
I haven't been, like I said, it's happening so quickly that it's almost impossible to keep up with unless you watch it every day.
I know. You know, there's a prediction that Billy made in 1951, and it says the monstrous mass and weight of the cities and villages continuously stress the inner structures of the earth more and more, through which the tectonic plates will be adversely affected. and it's going to lead to increasing tectonic displacements and faults, through which immense tremors will be evoked worldwide, and whereby finally the deaths will go into the hundreds of thousands and into the millions. Now, he made that prediction in 1951, and, you know, we're having huge earthquakes out there. You know, 6.7, we had an 8.2, was that just a few months ago, and I think that was Peru. You know, there's just crazy earthquakes right now. So, and I've always wondered, you know, with all of us and all this mass on here, you know, maybe we are contributing to the faults that are going on and the tremors.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I'm really glad you brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
You sound like you've been doing your homework. Do you remember what contact report that was?
I don't. No. It just said a 1951 prediction. So I don't know which one that is.
I'll have to look a little closer at the earthquake aspect of things.
Mm-hmm.
I was recently, what's that? I think it's contact 136. I was looking at, you know, by the way, I'm not really what I call a Billy Meyer prophecy person. I'm really into the spiritual teaching and the history a little bit more. But you can't ignore these prophecies. They're coming through.
You can't.
They're coming through left and right.
I know. They are. They are just incredible. Now, he's had some misses. He's saying World War III he thought was going to start in 2007. Then he said 2008. But, you know, the way things are going, it could be 2015, next year. We're in a precarious place right now with, you know, ISIS, with Russia, with everything that's going on in the world. So it's I don't know.
The Ukraine is very, very interesting. I really think it is. As a matter of fact, I'm really getting a little bit too self-indulgent here. Do you mind if I play one more really quick clip?
Go ahead. Now, sure. Go for it.
I'm just having fun. I'm sorry. These are Ukrainian fighter jets flying over. And just the only reason I like to play these is because I think it wakes people up to the incredible power associated with modern warfare. We are at a point now where warfare really isn't an option. Even the smaller countries have very, very powerful weapons. Anyway, I'll play this and then we'll get back on Billy.
Okay.
Now, those are the sounds of Ukrainian MiGs. They're not even Russian MiGs. So, the reason I like to play those because war isn't really an option anymore. You know, we're not fighting with sticks and stones anymore, people.
We're not, Mark. No, not at all. The whole war game has changed. I always think of that movie War Games with Matthew Broderick, and, you know, the no-win situation, you know, with global thermonuclear war, you know, where, you know, this computer starts going crazy, and it shows that no one would win. And it's true. No one would win. You know, we start firing at each other. Who's going to win? We're just going to destroy each other.
Yeah. There's no winning these wars today. I left off with Fa, Billy's first teacher. Would you like for me to tell you about Billy's second teacher?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Sloth told Billy that when he was 16 years old, that he would meet his second teacher. Sloth was over 1,000 years old, and he was about to die. So when Billy was 16 years old, he was told to go up on top of this hill in the evening, and out of the sky came this robotic craft, kind of a door open. Billy walked in. He sat down on a seat. There was no one else in the ship. And before he knew it, the door shut. The ship became invisible. He became invisible. And the ship sped away towards the Middle East. And it eventually landed in the country Jordan. And Billy stepped out, and he recognized Jordan for one reason or another. He saw the red rocks and felt the heat coming off the rocks. And it was getting close to evening time, and he looked over up in the sky, and he saw what looked like a falling star. And the star got larger and larger, and he realized it was a ship. And the ship came down, and it landed, and it sat there for half an hour. Nothing happened. So out of this craft stepped a woman named Asket. And Billy felt like he knew her somehow. He had deja vu or whatever. And she walked over and he asked her about that. I feel I know you for some reason. And Asket explained that she couldn't tell him how he knew her, that he would have to search his own thoughts and his own feelings. She told him that they needed to get in her ship, because they were going to go to Egypt. So Billy walked in the ship, and they landed somewhere in Egypt near the Giza Plateau. They stepped out of Asket's ship, and Asket put a device on Billy's belt, and she pressed something on this device, and Billy became invisible. She pressed something on her own belt. She became invisible as well. And she told Billy that they were going to go through a secret passage in the Great Pyramid and down far below the Giza Plateau into these old cubical constructions that were some 72,000 years old. So they did just that. They went through this passageway and then down these long, dark pitch walkways, and Asket told Billy he would have to be very quiet because there was a group, a renegade group, that had lived far below the Giza Plateau there for thousands of years, and they were called the Giza Intelligences. And Asket explained that it would not be good if they got captured by the Giza Intelligences. So anyway, they both walked down this long, dark corridor for the longest time, and they started to see this light coming, and they kept walking, and eventually they walked into this large, humongous hallway where the light seemed to come from all different directions. And Billy looked over and saw this very, very large spacecraft. And he saw guards standing all around. And he saw laying on the floor there what appeared to be a Y-shaped cross. And he saw these other artifacts. And he was stunned by all this, and he was having a hard time putting all this together in his own mind. So Asket decided it was time for them to leave. So they walked back up and out these corridors, and they got to the surface. And Asket explained to him that they had been in the headquarters of the Giza Intelligences, and that they were a splinter group, kind of a renegade group of the Plaiaran, and they had manipulated and deceived the people of the earth with visions for thousands of years. They had posed as angels or gods, and they had a specific kind of technology. They called it telenotic impulses. And Asket explained that the people of the earth, and this occurred in the 50s, 60s time frame, she explained that the people of the earth are still influenced by these telenotic impulses. And she said that we will still be here on the earth under the influences of this kind of mind control technology, so to speak, for a couple more centuries. She explained that the Giza intelligences had contacts with the Thule Society in Germany, with Hitler, and they were finally pushed off the earth around 1970-something or so, close 79-80 time frame. But they had harassed Billy. They had attacked people in his group. They can be traced all the way back to the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. And maybe we can get into that a little bit later. But that to me was a very, I had to listen to that one, that particular, I've read that many, many, many times. The earth does seem to be under some kind of influence. Anyway, after Billy had this experience, Semyase took him back to Switzerland, and he decided he was going to study the religions of the world. So he basically started traveling, mostly by foot, actually. And he went into the Middle East. He finally ended up in India at what's called the Ashoka Ashram. And he studied various religious teachings, and he continued his contacts with Ascot. In fact, Ascot's ship would appear right over the ashram sometimes, and she would be seen walking through the gardens there with Billy and having these very, very intensive conversations with her. Ascot, while she was there, also had telepathic contact with a young girl that Billy had met, who also actually physically saw Ascot. Her name was Phobal Chang, and she eventually became a UN diplomat. She went back to Switzerland to meet Billy. She became a very good witness for the authenticity of the case. So, but Billy met with Ascot for 11 years, and during that time, he allegedly took trips with her, even time travel trips. Eventually, he had that horrible bus accident where he lost his left arm. He met his wife, Calliope. They left the Middle East and they went back to Switzerland. And then Billy had he had a normal life for about 11 years. He had children. They moved back in the Hinterschmidruti area. And this was all before the contacts with Semyase, which most people are more aware of. But if you have any other questions, feel free to throw them in.
Okay. Well, Mark, you know, a lot of people think that he is a model maker, or he has somehow, you know, faked all these incredible, vivid, clear photos of UFOs, the beam ships they're called. And, you know, if he did, this is through the years that he's photographed these. There's no wires, there's no strings. He'd be the greatest photographer ever, you know, because he's a one-armed man, like you said. And how could he do that? I mean, it's just incredible. But still, there are the skeptics and the naysayers out there.
Oh, absolutely. It's very interesting because, you know, in my experience, and this is going to be kind of a strange way to come about this point of view, but even going back to the days when I was involved in bodybuilding, and you have friends take pictures at you at contests or whatever, and I don't know how many times. I mean, if you took 30 pictures, you'd be lucky to get 10 that came out okay. And the rest of them were strange looking, you know, strange angles, and you know you're moving, so it's blurry. And so when some of the pictures look strange, especially when there's 1200 of them, that it just never fazed me that much the way it fazed other people. I was more interested in getting into the core of the material, And one of the things that interests me most and continues to interest me is what Semyase would call the creation or the universal consciousness. Early in 75, she would meet with him. She would land her beam ship out in the open during the daylight in the beginning contacts, and she would step out of her ship and walk over to Billy and sit down under a tree, and she'd say the most beautiful thing. She would say, love and wisdom go together, and the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. And then she would go on to explain what this universal consciousness in that is that has created all things. And she explained that it's a neutral, positive entity that's neither good nor evil, that builds universes as a part of its own evolution. And she explained that the human spirit is a tiny fragment of the universal consciousness. It is truly an amazing thing, and I want to get into that a second, but I think I'm going to jump ahead to one of Billy's writings that explains...
Can I ask you something
real
quick, Mark?
Sure, go ahead.
You know,
yes.
Why haven't they made themselves known to us and only Billy? And, you know, these aliens seem to just, you know, find certain people, and why don't they just land? Has there ever been any explanation for that?
Yeah, quite a bit. Now, this is going to get even weirder, okay, in a way. They say that our life form here on Earth, at our level of evolvement, for lack of a better word, I'll say our vibrations, are to them very dangerous. In other words, they can't come near a normal Earth human any closer than 90 meters without protective electronic gear on, because there's something about our thoughts / vibrations at our level of evolvement that cause all sorts of... Semyase was actually injured because one of the people in the Figu accidentally came into a room during a contact where she was. And she suffered a very damaging head injury. It's a long story. But for them to come out in the open with us, for one thing, they would have to wear electronic gear to protect them. And what they say, because they're at a higher point of evolution, like, and I'm sure I'd be one of these people, that if there are people that are positively interested in the truth and understanding the real nature of things, that we would literally neglect everything in our life and stay as close as we could to whatever particular one that was near us, and we'd be like a puppy dog, so to speak. And we would drop everything. Everything. I mean, our jobs, everything. So, and the other aspect of this is, boy, it gets even more convoluted, because the people of the Earth, they have tried, allegedly, to contact our leaders, who they say were only interested in killing the Pleiaren and stealing the beamship technology. That's what they say. So they finally decided they would have a mission which would last 13,000 years and would involve a very, very ancient spirit that would reincarnate as an Earth human at various times in history to teach this teaching of the spirit, they call it. And Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad, and Edward Albert Meyer allegedly have taught basically the same information. And what they're trying to do is avoid what they call the third global conflagration. And it will either involve a gigantic war or the total breakdown of the natural world. And they see us as an insane society rushing headlong to our own destruction. And
oh boy, is that true.
Isn't that so true? Isn't
that
true?
It is. It is.
Now, and there's more to this. I just have to kind of like draw the line somewhere. But I wanted to get, you know, I mean, I can ramble on, and please interrupt me at any point. That was a great question, by the way.
Thank you. Well, you're doing a great job.
We've
only got a few more minutes, but I wanted you to, you know, can we change future events? You know, they've given Billy many, many predictions, and many of them have come true. Some of them, you know, still haven't come true, and maybe they will, maybe they won't. But can we change our future? Do they believe that we can change events?
First of all these things, these bad things, are most all of them are prophetical, meaning they may or may not happen. I think we have a chance. I still think we have a chance. In fact, the Pleiadians say the mission will be successful, and eventually the people of the earth will come to a time of prosperity and love and peace and all those kind of things. But we will have several centuries, and they say 8 centuries, of this transition period where things are going to become very, 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 very challenging. So, yes, there is good news, but it's kind of bittersweet.
Right. There's going to be a lot of changes.
I really want to thank you.
Oh, Mark, thank you.
It's been very fast.
I'll have to get you back. You know, I'll have to get you back because you're so knowledgeable about Billy Meyer. You know, when I have Michael Horn on, you know, we get to cover a couple of these things, and you've filled in such more. It's going to be on my show October 29th, but you did a great, great job, and you, like I said, you're really knowledgeable about Billy Meyer, and I thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Great.
My pleasure, Betsy.
I'll get you back again. And I want to thank the listeners for tuning in tonight. Again, Mark, would you give out all your information so where they can find you and your show, about your show, too?
Oh, yeah. If they'll Google Ohio Exopolitics, they'll find blogtalkradio.com/Ohio Exopolitics, and they'll find my other website, which has links to Freedom Slips, Revolution Radio, and things like that. So that'll be enough.
Mark, are you doing every week or more?
I do a Billy Meyer show every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio, and I do a kind of a regular show on Revolution Radio, and that's freedomslips.com, Studio B at 8 p.m. Eastern. And sometimes I'll throw one in during the week like this.
Well, great. You know, you've got a great show, and I enjoy your show, too. It's really great, and I appreciate what you do. You know, you're getting the message out there. You know, I've met so many great people on talk shows, the hosts, and I think it's just wonderful what you're doing, and so many other people are awakening people out there, and we need that right now. We need to get this information out, and that's what you're doing. So much for doing that.
Thank you, Betsy. It's been a real pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. And again, thank you, listeners, and this concludes our show for this evening. Have a great rest of the evening and a great rest of the week. Thank you, everybody. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.